this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers! This is episode 50, and I actually have notes and outline written for this week's episode. This week, I want to talk to you about starting and running a mom-to-mom peer support group. I've had some of you who've emailed me that you want to start a group in your own area because there isn't anything that you've been able to find. And I know if, you know, just a couple people emailed, that means more of you are thinking about it. But I just want to plant the seeds out there, give you the ideas, and I've even written up my notes so that I can, for once, have a blog post, and the information will be out there. But first, just touching base, I haven't done an episode in a couple of weeks. I just sort of gave in and let myself go with the chaos of Halloween, and Julian's birthday is November 2nd, so, you know, it's all just one big week of celebration after celebration, and we went kind of big for Halloween, not too big, but, you know, I took the kids to a pumpkin patch that last weekend in October, and they have trunk or treat at Pippa's preschool the day before Halloween, so we went to that, and we did trick-or-treating, and then she had a school parade two different days because she's in preschool 5 days a week, but there's, you know, the three-day program and the two-day program, so she was doing the parade both days, and she did different costumes, so, oh my gosh, when did Halloween turn into this, like, you know, it's at least 4 days of stuff here in Pasadena. Really, though, it can happen all month, and I've realized I have to just make my lists and then let it go. Like, there's something about making a list that is like a brain dump, and it gets everything out of my head and clears the head. And then I have to start showing my lists, or at least talking about my lists with Nathan, because, like, I should do an episode about holidays since it is the holiday season, but, like, one thing that's always on my to-do list is Christmas cards, and I hate Christmas cards. I just, like, I'm not good at keeping track of people's addresses, and there's just no joy in all the stress of, like, asking my parents for their address book, and then emailing friends, like, for the eighth year in a row, like, where do you live? I can't remember if you're in this city or if it's this address. I'm not good at it. So I've, you know, Nathan, like, laughed at me. He's like, of course you don't have to do Christmas cards. I'm going to do the Facebook post and then maybe email people as their cards arrive who I know aren't on Facebook or Instagram, because I actually know a lot of those people. And, like, that's it. So let it go. So anyway, here I am going off track already. So just want to let you know I was caught in the vortex of Halloween and Julian's birthday. And also Julian, a few days before, like a week before he turned two, he figured out how to climb out of the pack and play. We have a crib. He never wanted to sleep in the crib. He loved the pack and play. And then he figured it out. Never saw him trying. It's not like he was, like, straining to get out of the pack and play. It's just one day he was sleeping in the pack and the play, and then the next day, thump out, not taking his nap. And that happened with the babysitter. So I get home, and it was a late day, so I get home, like, almost 6, and I was going out that night for a school presentation, and the babysitter's like, so he can get out now, and I'm like, oh, shit. And I thought I was going to see him trying to get out so I would have time to prepare. And he wasn't even 2 yet. And Pippa was in her crib until, like, 3. And then we only transitioned her to the bed because Julian was born. And we're like, we need this crib for your brother. She loved the crib. She slept in the sleep sack for so long. And we did the sleep sacks without the footies so that. But even once we transitioned her to footies, she didn't care. She didn't even. She was a climber, but she didn't feel. Had any interest in trying to climb out of the crib. Julian, on the other hand, a week before he turns 2, voila, he's out. And I know that there's some of you who have kids who get out way earlier, and now I get it. Okay. Each kid is their own adventure. So we disassembled the crib. Nathan got home. I tell him what's up. The pack and play was in what's really our guest room, and we were always planning on moving the kids into their own rooms together. But the pack and play was in our guest room, which is not safe. It's safe if your child is trapped in a pack and play or a cage, a baby cage. Why don't they make baby cages? Like, there should be like an attachment for the pack and play or for cribs that you just put on top, and it's like they're in the Thunderdome and they're trapped in there, and at least you know they're safe and alive. But the room that the pack and play was in, just not really ideal. There's a piano, and he's a climber, so he can't topple a piano. Okay, he can topple a dresser. We've already talked about that. Not a piano. But he could climb to the top of the piano, and then he's 5+ feet off the ground, and, you know, then he could jump off and break a leg, and I'd find him in the morning, you know, laying there with a broken leg. Great. We also have a closet in that room, one of those closets that's like has the sliding door that has mirrors on it, and there's like two panels, and it's a huge closet, and the damn doors will not stay on their tracks, and we've had multiple handymen try to look at it and try to fix it, and we just can't get those things to stay. They're probably older than me, those doors. They're probably like 50 years old, so, you know, give them a break. They've done their service. But I couldn't have Julian crawl out of a pack and play, jump off a piano, and then like throw his body against a mirrored sliding door that comes off a track and would probably just fall over and kill him. So, you know, I love my children and I like to keep them alive. So we disassembled the crib that he never actually slept in and put those pieces away. We locked the kids out of the guest room, which we always did anyway, except when Julian was sleeping. Isn't it nice when you let your child sleep in a room that's like otherwise a death trap, but it's okay since they're in like the socially acceptable equivalent of a baby cage? So we took off the crib mattress, put that on the floor in Pippa's room, and so we, in one night, without any warning, went from Julian sleeping in the pack and play to Julian sleeping on a crib mattress on the floor in Pippa's room. Like, they hadn't shared a room before. And it's been going okay, but he is having not what is a sleep regression, but what our pediatrician says is a sleep smarts. He's now intelligent to the fact that he doesn't have to sleep when we tell him to sleep, that he's allowed to wake up earlier. Isn't that great? My boy's smart about sleep. Oh, I wish he was stupid about sleep and just slept when I told him to. Today, so I'm recording this 2 days after the time change, and some of you are in countries without time changes. Lucky. I could just do a whole episode about the damn time change, and I'm like really, really tempering my language because I have much stronger words I could use about time changes. So we're having the time change, and Julian's sleeping on a crib mattress, and he's sleeping with Pippa. And then this morning, 2 days after the time change, like every 6 months, he takes a dump in the middle of the night, and then that ruins his sleep because he's gotten like 9 hours of sleep. And then the act of taking a shit wakes him up. Obviously, you know, babies can pee in their sleep. Pooping's harder. So, and of course it happened today. So he wakes up at like 4:20 and tells Nathan that he had a pee-pee leak. And Nathan's stumbling through the dark and he gets the diaper and he comes in and then he sniffs and he's like, Julian, did you go boo-boo? He's like, boo-boo! And, you know, then, and so they go through this whole procedure, and God bless Nathan. He was the one who was up and out of bed and cleaning poop at 4:20 in the morning, and which I realize is actually 5:20 in the morning, or was 5:20 in the morning 3 days ago. So not as bad as real 4:20, but there's still the psychology of it being 4:20 in the morning. And we never got, Julian never really went back to sleep. He stayed in the room with a bottle for a while, and I could have sworn he was back to sleep, but then, you know, Jack in the Box, he pops back up. Okay, so I've been talking way more about sleep. That's just what's been going on in our life. I feel like the baseline of where we are in terms of having our basic needs as humans met is a lot higher than it was 4+ years ago when Pippa was first born. Like, there's these regressions or, you know, intelligence leaps, I don't know, or dips in terms of, like, phases. You know, there's good phases with kids, and then there's, like, they're working on something or they figure something out, and it's a bad phase, but, you know, relatively speaking. But overall, like, I'm a little tired today. I've been a little tired overall because me and Nathan have been taking turns with our little jack-in-the-box boy who's awake at 4 or 5 in the morning, way earlier than he should be. Because he's just a boy who loves his sleep. But our baseline is so much higher than if he was like a newborn. Like, this is so much better than him waking up once or twice in the night to have a bottle. And this is so much better than me waking up twice or three times a night to breastfeed Pippa. So I'm trying to remind myself of, you know, I think any stage you are with a parent, as a parent, there's going to be tough phases, but it's helpful for me to like throw my mind back and be like, yeah, this is tough compared to where we were 2 weeks ago when Julian slept in his pack and play and everything was very civilized and we put him down and he went to sleep and he was asleep for 11 or 12 hours. Yes, comparatively, things are a little more difficult now than they were 2 weeks ago, but we will get through this and things are still enormously easier than they were 2 years ago when he was like not even a week old. So, and I was recovering from a C-section and Pippa was adapting to life with, you know, a brother, and which actually wasn't a difficulty at all. So, you know, long story short, we're in a tougher phase than we were 2 weeks ago, but overall life is much better than it was 2 years ago. And it just keeps getting easier. But what I want to talk about today with you, and what I made notes about, notes, and not even just notes, but like an outline, peer support groups. Okay, first, let me give a quick overview of what I've done. And then I have 10 tips for starting a mom-to-mom support group. I started my first group when Pippa was just over a year old. I was hospitalized when Pippa was 4 months old with postpartum depression, which was like depression plus anxiety plus OCD, also insomnia, which was part of the depression and anxiety, but I think this is something people sometimes don't get. So if this is like your first time coming to the show, I want to like give you the umbrella view or the forest view. I don't know. I am tired because even though I didn't have to get up to clean the poop, I was still awake. So I started my first group. I did it on Meetup. It was something I wanted when I got out of the hospital. I thought, okay, I have a psychiatrist and I have a psychologist. And I have this new Mommy and Me class I'm going to go to, but that's just like a regular Mommy and Me class where we're talking about should we sleep train or not and the transition from to solids and all that stuff. I wanted, like, where is a group of moms who have or had postpartum depression that I can hang out with and have these conversations about our mental health and who speak my language? And I couldn't find that group. I found one or two groups. I found definitely one group and then one group that had existed that cost money and were run by psychologists or therapists. And I didn't want that. I was like, I already have a psychologist and a psychiatrist. I didn't want too many chefs to spoil the soup. And I didn't want to be paying more money. Honestly, I was already paying for the psychiatrist and the psychologist and the medications and for, we, you know, had help from a doula. I felt like enough money was being spent on me. Now, in hindsight, I can see that it was money well worth spending and that I could have been spending more and got better faster than I did. But at the time, in the moment of the recovery, I just wasn't prepared to like be like, okay, and now I want to spend $50 a week to go hang out with moms who have postpartum depression. I just wasn't ready to spend that extra money. So I didn't. But when I was just over, when Pippa was just over a year old, I'd had this idea for months and months, and finally I was like, okay, let's pull the trigger. And I started this mom-to-mom support group. I think I called it, like, We're Not Alone, with an exclamation mark. And I started it through Meetup, meetup.com, which is great in the Pasadena area. I don't know how great it is, though, in your part of the world, because, you know, everyone has their own thing. Like, in Pasadena, people are really big on Yelp, Y-E-L-P, Yelp for, and it's just great for finding restaurants and coffee shops and even things like doctors and contractors and like tree trimmers, those sorts of things. It's really great. But I, you know, when we've gone to Nebraska in the past to visit Nathan's family, I've checked Yelp and it didn't seem to be as, and maybe this has changed, but when I've checked it in the past, it didn't seem to be as intensely used as it is here. And I'm sure there's other online resources, and I should just ask the Nebraskan people what resources I should be checking. So you know your community best, or you know the people who live in your community and you can talk to. So if you're in Pasadena, or I would argue anywhere in the LA area, Meetup is a great tool. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So I started my group there. And Meetup sends out like an announcement to all the people who might have indicated an interest in your type of group. And people joined. And I set meetings. And they were erratic. They were not weekly, and they were not the same time, and they were not at the same place. And we would meet at parks, different parks in the Pasadena area. And at my first group, there was just one mom. And for my first several groups, it was that one mom. And she was awesome. And I feel like this really deep bond towards her. And when we run into each other like once a year, and it's just always so wonderful to see her. And it really felt so amazing, even though it was just one mom. And sometimes this other mom would RSVP, but it took her many RSVPs until she was actually able to attend, because that's mom life. You know, it's chaotic and you think you can make it, and then your child gets sick, or your child is up in the middle of the night teething, or you suddenly realize, I really need to use this block of time to walk around Target alone with an iced coffee and look at everything at Target, because that's just what you need that day. So it was a slow build, and my group, I eventually had to close it down when I was pregnant with Julian, because it never got too big. It didn't help that I was erratic and we were meeting in public places and, you know, at parks and playgrounds, and it was getting tough because Pippa was running away from me, and I was more busy watching her than I was able to just talk to moms about really serious important stuff. So, but then I got pregnant with Julian, and morning sickness destroys me, and I shut the group down. I think I posted on the meetup about how, like, look, I'm really sorry, but we're not going to be having meetings anytime in the near future because I'm pregnant. And that was that. And but then I restarted it when Julian was 6 months old. I'm really tired today. Let me have a sip of my Coke Zero. Oh, yes, I needed that. Let me take one more sip. Oh, damn, that's good. Get that caffeine. I tried to quit caffeine. I've tried to quit so many times, but maybe when my kids are older and actually sleeping consistently, we'll do that. Where was I? So, yes, when Julian was about 6 months old, I was ready to restart, and I restarted for Meetup. And it quickly became apparent to me that I needed a steady time and place and venue. And I knew, okay, so the libraries in Pasadena have meeting rooms, and they are free to use so long as your meeting is open to the public. And I was concerned, though. I'm like, well, this is really for like mommies and maybe sometimes a daddy, but I wanted to be able, I've never had to kick someone out of my group ever. But I wanted to be able to tell people, like, no, I'm sorry, this is really a postpartum support group. I didn't need like some, you know, 70-year-old man who was bored and thought it would be cool to hang out with a bunch of like moms. Like, I didn't need that happening. So I reached out to a couple of local places. I don't know what to call them. They're not stores. They're places that cater to the mommy crowd with like birth classes and mommy and me groups and music classes. And one responded and said, great, when would you like to meet? And I replied, and then they never responded. And then the other, though, responded almost as quickly and said, you know, when would you like to meet? And then they were like, that's fabulous, the Thursday afternoon works. And I have been there at the family room, which is in San Marino, which is Pasadena adjacent. And I've been there for, oh gosh, a year and a half now, Thursdays from 1 to 2:30. It actually used to be a slightly different time, but it's 1 to 2:30 now, and it's working great. And I've learned a lot from running a mom-to-mom peer support group. And so I just want to do my 10 top tips and pieces of information for someone running a support group. Before I do it, I want to give you a bonus number 11 tip. There are books out there that have been written by the amazing Jane Honickman, who is one of the founders, or maybe the only founder, I always forget, of Postpartum Support International. And she started PEP with a couple other moms, which is, oh my gosh, I'm blanking. It's something about educating and parents in postpartum, and I can't remember how to put the words together. But so she has tons of experience in running postpartum support groups and doing peer-to-peer support. She's not a mental health professional. She is a mom like us with tons of experience who's been doing this at least since the 70s, if not the 60s. And she has written books, and they're on Amazon. And I will link to this in the show notes. And yes, we will have show notes this time. This is episode 50. That does feel special. It does warrant show notes. Her books are called Community Support for New Families, I'm Listening, A Guide to Supporting Postpartum Families, and Postpartum Action Manual, How to Provide Comfort, Encouragement, and Guidance to New Families. I've read 2 out of 3 of these books, and I'm so tired I can't remember which of the 2 out of 3. I own all 3, and the 2 I read were really, really good. I think I haven't read Postpartum Action Manual yet, and now that I'm doing this episode, I'm like, I need to go back and read that book this week. But they're great ideas for figuring out what you want to do. And so it's like a practical manual from someone with way more experience than me. So I would highly encourage you to check them out. And if you feel like you need something more to get you started, because I understand sometimes you want to just like have all the information you need. That said, my first tip is if you want to start a mom-to-mom support group, just do it. Don't worry about figuring everything out in advance. Don't worry about getting all fancy. You don't need a website. You don't need a blog. You don't need a fancy blog header. You don't need to hire like a graphic artist. You don't need to know who your first 100 members are going to be. You don't even need to know who your first member is going to be. You don't need a 5-year plan. You do not have to be perfect in the beginning. Your group can and actually should evolve over time as you figure out what you want your group to be. Just start. And this is something that I've learned from life in general and also from being a writer, because I've started writing my first real novel. I've written a novel before, and it's crap, and I won't even talk about that now. But like when you're writing, it's something about like just actually starting, and you can outline and plan and dream up your characters and decide what your character's favorite color is and what happened at their 3rd birthday party. But at the end of the day, you're not going to really know where the book is going until you've started writing the book. And that's the same with a mom-to-mom support group. You just need to start it and do it, because sometimes the starting and the thinking about starting and the anticipation is way harder than actually just doing it. And it is okay to be like, what I want to have is a weekly support group, but to actually start with a quarterly support group. Start with what you can do. And that leads me to my second tip. Do what works for you. In a perfect world, these support groups for moms would be offered in every neighborhood of the world at dozens of different times throughout the week. You would have night and weekend groups for the working set. You would have morning, you know, for the morning people. You'd have late morning, early afternoon, late afternoon, because people have different nap schedules and they just have different times that work for them. And you would have different locations, you know, even in the same neighborhood, and you would have all sorts of alternatives. But you're human. You can't be everything to everyone. I've gone crazy because I've have, you know, people who find me now and who email me, and they are like, and they email, and I tell them when my group is, and they email back, and it's like, that doesn't work for me. Or I'm looking for a weekend group, or I'm looking for nighttime, or I'm looking for Friday. And there's always this instinct where I'm like, oh, well, I got to start this for them. And no, I can't. Thursdays, 1 to 2:30 every week at the family room. That's what works for me. And it works really well. I can't do the other times. I'd go crazy if I was like trying to run 5 of these groups a week. I'd go crazy even if I was trying to run 2 of these. 1 is what I can do. And that is the time and the day that works for me. My heart breaks for the working moms out there who aren't able to make it, but I can't do that for them. There is even a mom who attended my group once before going back to work, and it took her a while, but she is in the process, and she's been starting a Saturday group in the Pasadena area. And I'm just like, yes, do it, start, you know. And I'm happy to tell people, anyone I know, and to use my meetup group to spread the word on her group. And I think that's, you know, it's wonderful to inspire other people to start, you know, their groups. But don't feel like you have to start a group for every person. Just do what you can do. Pick the time, the location, the frequency, the logistics that work for you, so the group is sustainable. Because if it's not sustainable for you, it's better to have something than nothing. And if you're going to burn yourself out and torment yourself, you're just not going to be able to do the group. And, you know, and you could come up with the parameters for the group. If you just want a group that is for people who have had, you know, if you pick, like, this group started as a postpartum depression group, meaning all mental mood disorders for moms. My group started that way because that's what I wanted. And now it's evolved, and it's more called a postpartum support group. And so it's not like it's all moms who have a formal diagnosis or even all moms who think there's something wrong with them. It's for everyone. And that's what really works in the Pasadena area. It's a group for moms who want to talk about their mental health, their well-being, something beyond the transition to solid foods. We're not talking about how to take care of the babies. Actually, we do. We sometimes talk about it because, but in the aspect of we're having mental health issues, someone's like, oh my God, my kid's not sleeping and I'm not sleeping. And I feel myself like getting more anxious and I feel myself collapsing back, having a relapse with postpartum depression. It's like, okay, let's talk about sleep and what we need to do for you. But so you need to come up with the parameters for the group that work for you. Sorry, my phone just keeps pinging, but it's Tuesday morning and I feel like I need to be able to have access to my children. You know, I don't know what people did without cell phones, but then again, I wish I had that life. That's another episode to talk about social media and cell phones. Okay. Tip number three, lower your expectations. Your group you may hit the ground running with tons of members and, you know, like a packed room, and that is fabulous. And I hope that's what happens if that's what you want. But then again, maybe moms are going to RSVP and never show up for a meeting. Maybe there's going to be weeks or even months when no one attends. Just be patient and remember, first off, this is what has happened to Courtney. This has happened to me. I've had plenty of weeks in a row where no one's there. And I have slumps, like where everything has been building momentum and I have like a half dozen moms coming and it feels like, oh my gosh, we're never going to have a quiet week again. And then the next week, no one's there. You just don't know what's happening with the moon phases and with, you know, politics and elections and the weather and like hormonal atmospheric shifts. I don't know. Just keep your expectations low. Like, life with a baby is difficult. Be patient and remember that you're working with a tough crowd. Nap schedules change, babies get sick, get really excited when there's a mom there. Like, congratulate yourself when there's one mom attending. Because, damn, that mom worked really hard to be there. And don't, like, think, like, oh, I'm not good at this because there aren't enough moms coming. No, it can take a while to create a community resource like this. And word of mouth is great, but it takes a while. So just be patient with yourself. So I'm going to skip ahead to another tip I had. I'm too tired. I don't remember. I had a little brain link happening and then it just fizzled. Oh, well. Okay. I have notes. So I'm going to get to everything. I had like a really nice segue, but then the segue just collapsed in my mind. So let's just pretend that this brain fart didn't happen and proceed on to tip number four. Don't take anything personally. I think this is critical for just about everything in life. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that The Four Agreements are one of my favorite books. I can't stop talking about it. And I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to stop talking about it. I think The Four Agreements should be required reading for all of humanity. And if only for you to reject it and say this is shit. But I think everyone could benefit and learn something from that book. And I will link to it in the show notes. But if you're going to run a mom-to-mom support group, in addition to, if you wanted to do some reading to get you started because you just feel like you need to do something to prepare, read Jane Honickman's books or, you know, just at least one of them. And then go read The Four Agreements to get yourself, like, amped up to realize, don't take anything personally. Moms are going to show up to your group who will be present at the group and clearly hating it, okay? It's not about you. It's their journey. It's their adventure. It's not your adventure. The group, running the group, yeah, that's part of your adventure. But that person's experience, that mom who comes in and who is in like having like the worst day of her life, or who is for whatever reason like struggling to get better but not able to fully accept where she is yet in her adventure, people do not want to have a mental illness. Let me repeat that. People do not want to have a mental illness. Maybe there's some people out there who do, which is probably a mental illness in and of itself. But for the most part, most moms do not put on their wish list, oh Jesus, I hope I get postpartum depression. It's just not there. You're thinking like, I can't wait to like put these booties on my baby and I hope I get some cute bibs. Or, you know, you have like those fantasies about like the first Halloween costume, or, you know, you're hoping for a girl or a boy, even though you'll never admit it. Or you're hoping for, you know, a child with red hair because your great grandma had red hair and you'd love to see that gene continue. Those sorts of things people hope for. They don't hope for postpartum depression. And some people may make it to your group, and they may be there, and they may be going for some really serious shit while they're there. I had a mom who came once, and she was brought there by her sister-in-law, and me and the sister-in-law, like, she left the room, and we didn't talk about her at all, but I just exchanged one glance, and we could just, we're filled with agony because this woman was clearly suffering, and also just clearly not ready to see that she was suffering and to reach out for the help she needed. And I hope she got there really soon. I hope she woke up the next day and got there. I never saw her again. I usually have an email list and I invite people who attend to add themselves to the email list, and she did not want to do that. I didn't take it personally. I did feel bad, but then I thought about it and processed it and realized this isn't about me. This is about this woman who is suffering and really having trouble coming to terms with it, and coming to my group is part of her journey to wellness and is part of her adventure, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily the most positive step. And maybe in 20 years she'll look back and see, like, oh, I see what that woman was trying to say to me. But you can't save everyone, and I really should have that be a step. Okay, you know what, forget it, fuck it, this is not 10 tips, this is 11 tips. I'm adding this, you can hear me typing. You can't save everyone. Okay. You're not the savior. You're not a prophet. You're just a human trying to run a mom-to-mom support group. And so I'm asking you to not take things, you know, personally from how people react and who comes back and who becomes a regular and what they think about your group. You know, I ask people for their emails, and I will send emails. I BCC, so no one's, you know, information is compromised. A lot of the moms I know have exchanged their information and meet outside of the group, and that's fabulous, but I want them to do that on their own initiative, you know, because some people really don't want other people knowing, and they want some privacy and confidentiality. So some people, I will occasionally remind people, like, if you want to be off this email list because that's part of your journey, I understand, just let me know. And people have responded, just I think like two or three, but, you know, in a year and a half, like, can you please take me off the email list? And that's okay. Don't take it personally. It's not about you. It's about them. I had to really shut down and hide everything on my Facebook feed about postpartum depression towards the end of my pregnancy and the first few months of Julian's life, even though I was writing a memoir, even though I was really passionate about, you know, being an advocate, even though I'd started a support group. I had to scale all that back and just sort of insulate myself because I just knew in my gut that that was what I needed. And there are going to be moms who, for whatever reason, are going to need your group and then are going to not read it, need it. And for whatever reason, they need to not even get like an email from you about like a reminder that the group's meeting on Saturday to go to like, you know, the coffee shop. Like, no. Don't take things personally. Just trust and accept that other people are having their journeys. I think that's the toughest part about running a group, is that you could take it personally. And if you have a week where four people told you they're coming and no one shows, you will be like, oh, it's because I'm boring, or they think that I made like an offensive joke last week and I hope I didn't like, you know, make someone feel bad. It's not about you. Like, it's because, you know, like, their child didn't nap, or their child is teething, or because they're feeling really amazing and suddenly feeling really inspired to go to a museum and they don't want to sit in a room and talk about their mental health. They actually just want to live their life. Don't take it personally. Don't invest your confidence in what happens in group week to week, because there's going to be weeks where the chemistry is there and everyone's clicking and laughing and sharing stories and crying and everything is beautiful. And then there's going to be weeks where no one shows. And then there's going to be weeks where there's just like three people and it's a really awkward combination and something is just off. And someone who needs the group is just like, it's not going to gel with them because the chemistry was weird. So, but don't take it personally. You're not responsible for who shows and who doesn't show. And remember, everyone has their own journey. And I know I've been talking about this forever and it's time to move on to the next tip, but I thought that one was really important. Okay. Tip five, some moms need to attend regularly and you will have regulars eventually. Give yourself time, but you will get regulars. But others only need to attend once and that is it. And then they feel validated and heard, and they feel the comfort of being in a room with other moms who think this is something worth talking about and acknowledging and not being secret about. And that is all they need. And just be thrilled that they have gotten what they need and they have moved on. And it's going to be both sides of the spectrum, because I went to the Postpartum Action Institute almost a year ago with that Jane Honickman and Dr. Shoshana, who are really great postpartum advocates and have done tons of work in this area. And they were talking about their experiences with starting groups. And Dr. Shoshana had lots of regulars and like crowded rooms and people who she felt like, it's almost like they got stuck in needing the group, and they were coming to the group well past the time that they needed it. And they were like little fledgling birds that she had to kind of push out of the nest. Like, you've got this, go be, you know, live your life. You don't need to be coming to this group. Whereas Jane felt like like they ran the numbers, and their average number. So of all the people who attended their support groups, they attended an average of one time. Like, that was the number, once. That was what people in her group, which became like the Foundation for Postpartum Support International, that's how many times they needed to attend. So just keep that in mind, that for some people, it really takes just one time. And maybe it's just even just like the comfort of knowing the group is there in case they feel like they need to go back. So I think that's an important thing to know. All right, tip number six. Remember, you are not a mental health professional unless you are. Be sure to mention your status to any new moms who attend. This is my old lawyer kicking in. But you don't want someone attending the group and thinking you're a psychologist and you're not. You also don't want people attending the group and you're a psychologist, but they don't know what dynamics. Now, if you're a psychologist or a therapist or psychiatrist, I cannot give you any advice. I don't know what your standards of care are, so you have to go figure that out. But if you're just a mom, if you're like me and you're leading a group, just be clear about that. Say, hi, I facilitate the group, and maybe give like a couple sentences of your history. But, you know, I'm not a mental health professional. I say that. I am not a mental health professional. I just think it's really great to have a venue where moms can gather and in a judgment-free place to talk about their mental health and well-being. And that's it. So that, I mean, I don't have people signing waivers. And, you know, I don't even want to dip into the territory of giving legal advice. It's not something I've had to worry about. But I do think it's important to be clear on telling people, I'm not a mental health professional. And then not to do anything where you even try to like act like a mental health professional. And that's a whole topic for another episode. But, you know, don't try to diagnose anyone. You can't diagnose. You can just remember that you're more in the role of a friend. And you can say, you know, this sounds awful. Go talk to your doctor about it. But don't say, well, you clearly have postpartum depression and you need a prescription, or, oh, prescriptions don't work. You need to, you know, take these healthcare supplements, or, you know, just be wary of who you are and what your training is and what your relationship with the people who attend is, and educate the people who are attending as to who you are and what your experience is. Okay. Number seven, if you have the money, I think it's great to set up a meetup group. I think it costs $70 a year. Maybe they bumped it. Maybe it's a little closer to $100. And that gives you the resources. When you have one meetup account, that gives you, you're allowed to have three groups. And they have more expensive pricing if you're, you know, someone who wants 1,000 groups, or, you know, 20 or something. I pay every year, or maybe it's a 6-month period. I don't know. And I have two groups right now, one in Pasadena, one in LA. I regularly post for the Pasadena group, and I sometimes remember to post for LA. It's just another way, because you can set geographic limits. It's just another way for people to find me. I think it's great in Pasadena. Again, I don't know what is the search engine people are using in your area. My group of meetup acts, it's not Google, but it really optimizes search results so that if you're on meetup, people are more likely to find you. And if people search Pasadena postpartum depression, my group comes up. I don't know if it sometimes comes up for me on the first page of results, and sometimes just the second, but it comes up really quickly. And that wouldn't happen but for meetup. So for me, Meetup has worked great. But for spreading the word, there's Facebook. You know what the group, where people are getting the information in your community. I've told obstetricians and pediatricians. I had a new mom attend last week because of an obstetrician. I've definitely had people sent to me by my kids' pediatricians. And I've hung up flyers at local mommy and me classes and indoor playgrounds. So it's also just word of mouth. And a lot of people, because my group is every week at the family room and the family room has its own website and lists all its resources, a lot of people who go to the family room find my group through there. I do think it's important to spread the word, but I also think it's important to not go crazy and try to like give yourself a marketing degree and to act like you're launching the next Amazon or, that like this is some multi-billion dollar business that you're starting. No, you're trying to start a mommy and me group. You can, I'm in the process of making some new postcards for my group, and I'll try to remember to post what I actually created in case you want to just use mine. You can go to Vistaprint. I like to use them, and you can spend like $20 and get like 100 postcards or and a little, not much more for 500. And that's an easy way to like leave postcards with doctors. And it just depends on how much money you have and you're able to spend. If you don't have money, go with word of mouth. It's okay. And that's actually tends to be the most effective. And just telling moms, what you do, you never know, like one mom knows, 20 other moms and who they're going to tell. And so be patient with like the time needed to spread the word for your group. Okay, tip number 8, you're allowed to quit. I quit when I was pregnant with Julian because, hello, morning sickness, until the day I gave birth. Know yourself. Know your limits. You have to meet your needs before you can meet anyone else's. When you're sitting here thinking, should I start the group, do not try to anticipate the next 50 years of your life and how long you can run this group for. You can run the group for 3 weeks and then decide, this is not working for me, and quit. You are allowed to quit any time. So don't try to be like, oh, well, what if my kids have a rough patch for 3 months? Well, then you close down for 3 months and then you tell people, like it's mom life. People know. You're allowed to do that, okay? You're allowed to quit. But you're allowed to start over if you quit. Remember, I restarted my group when Julian was 6 months old, and the second incarnation of the group has been even better than the first because I committed to a regular time and day. And I asked the family room if I could use their space to host my meetings. And Karen at the family room has been wonderful at making space for us. And it's free. You don't need to be paying to get space for a free group. So, don't work with someone who's like asking you to spend like $100 a month or something. Don't do that. You don't have to. You can reach out to indoor playgrounds or check out what your local library's meeting room availability is. Ask places that are like the family room that offer birthing classes. Maybe, be creative. Like I know one of my guests, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her name. She wrote a book. I'll find it. She got a support group running for her pediatrician's office. They were letting her use that space for the group. There are a lot, you know what's available. Brainstorm. And what the great thing with brainstorming is, remember, you don't have to write down only viable ideas. Like try to write down like 30 places that you could that might let you host your group, because who knows, maybe there is a coffee shop that's a little slow on Wednesday mornings at 11 and they're like, yeah, sure, you can have that back room every week. Like if people are gonna, and if two people buy a coffee, we're happy. Like, there's coffee shops, there's pediatricians, there's obstetricians, there's, like I said, the indoor playgrounds, your parks and recreation department might want to do something, your libraries, and you could call it a book club if you want to meet every month. And, I should have said this before when I was saying with the logistics and the frequency, again, do what works for you. Weekly, monthly, quarterly, don't act like you have to do daily or even weekly. Like really, you need to do what works for you. So you can start again if you quit. And tip number 10, remember, you are helping people who you will never meet. I promise you are. For some moms, just knowing your group exists is a huge relief. It helps them realize they are not alone. It's like with this podcast. I know I'm helping some of you out there who I will never talk to, who I will never meet, but I see that people are downloading the show, and so I know that for every mom who emails me, I assume there's 10 more who are just too crazy and deranged to email. And, that's what's happening with your group. Just existing Like someone's like, oh, well, I can't attend that because I work, or I can't attend that because of the baby's nap time. And they're not even going to consciously go through this thought process, but there is a comfort in knowing that there is actually a need for this group. Because no matter how many times you hear like the statistic, like 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 5 moms gets a maternal mood disorder, you're like, okay, the statistic's this high. Why are there, you know, support groups for, you know, owners of dead chinchillas, but there's no support group for moms with postpartum depression? If it's so common, why is it easier to find grief support for the death of a pet than it is to find a support group for postpartum mental issues? But, you know, that's because of the stigma, and it's improving. And so when you start the group, you are fighting the stigma. You know what? That's really important. I'm going to write that down. When you start the group, you are fighting the stigma. Sorry, this is how I work, okay? Okay, so then that number 11 tip I already mentioned, but the tip number 11 is you can't save everyone. And that said, I think this is a great place to end, because I could talk about this all day. Maybe I'll do another episode about this at some point. Postpartum depression is a really lonely, isolating illness. And that's why I thought this was a good episode to do, because if you're thinking about creating one of these groups, you really are going to help fight against that loneliness and isolation. For all of you out there listening who are currently suffering, you're not alone. There are thousands of women before you have suffered, thousands who are in the same exact darkness as you right now. I know you can't see them because it is so dark, but they are there stumbling along with you. You can and will make a full recovery, and you deserve to make a full recovery. You did nothing wrong. I love you, and I hope you have a great week.